When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Guys, welcome to the Everyday Warrior podcast with Christian Nairn, who you know as Hodor of the record-setting Just TV series Game of Thrones. Christian is an extremely well-rounded guy, also a prolific DJ from Ireland, sort of their in-house resident DJ. But more importantly, Christian has a book coming out called Beyond the Thrones on September 24th. And we'll get into that. But Christian, thank you for joining us this morning.
Thank you for having me.
And I said morning. You're located in Ireland, so it's probably...
It's about 4. It's about 4 o'clock, 4 p.m.
Okay. Where do you live in Ireland?
I'm just outside Belfast. I'm from Belfast in the north. There's a little town called Lisburn. That's where I was born and bred. I still live just within the perimeters of Lisburn. So... yeah, I haven't really moved very far. Still feels, I never want to move from here. I love Ireland and I feel at home here. And I wouldn't want to live anywhere else, I don't think.
Who doesn't love Ireland? I've been a couple times. I'll tell you about the sense of community. Oh, of course. Yeah. The sense of community is not, it's something, we don't have that in the US anymore. And you guys have that. I'm sure not towards, you know, Belfast, the bigger cities. The sense of community is there. But I always love the small towns in Ireland. I'll be honest, dude. Go ahead.
Sorry?
Go ahead.
Sorry. It's weird having pride from coming from Ireland. I think I saw this in a comedy routine a few years ago. I can't remember which comedian it was, but I remember when they hear people from America and people in a comedy show say, anybody here from Michigan or, like, from Alabama? Everyone's like, yeah! Yeah, but if you said, like, are you from anyone here from Lisburn? We're all like, yeah, we're from Lisburn. Well, that's just kind of the way we are, but I am very proud to be from here. So,
how many people in Lisburn?
Probably about 80,000.
Oh, so it's a relatively big size.
It's
a lot of
people. Yeah, it's big enough. It's a large town. It's known as a city for now, but it's a nice place. It's got a lot of history here around the linen industry. Came over from France with the Huguenots and stuff like that. It's a very interesting place. So.
Well, dude, I also get a hit. I mean, you watch the shows and you watch Our Flag Means Death, which was a great show. We know you're a big dude. I didn't realize until I read up on you. You're 6'10".
Yeah. Yeah, it's just ridiculous.
Were you always the big kid in the class?
Yeah, man. I was, I don't remember ever not being head and shoulders above everybody. It was always very strange, and then I always sort of had a lot more in common with the older kids because they were the same size as me. Then I realized I was sort of running out of older kids and I was still going to be taller than the older kids, you know. But yeah, it was interesting. It was an interesting way to grow up, but I was always the one who stood out, really.
Yeah, which can be a good thing.
It can be a good thing, you know. I think after 48 years on the planet, I've kind of learned how to craft it into being a good thing. But it certainly was not when I was growing up.
That's amazing. So you had a real calling to the arts.
I did.
At a young age. I mean, not only acting, but I mean, you were heavy into, I read guitar. You started out on guitar.
Yeah. Did you? I can kind of play anything, man. If you leave me in a room with an instrument for 10 minutes, usually... apart from drums, I'm not very good at the drums. I can usually pick it up. It just comes naturally. I feel very lucky for that.
And so did you spend a lot of time growing up playing as much as possible?
Yeah, well, my mum forced me into playing the piano when I was a kid, which I'm now very grateful. Hi, kids. If your mum wants you to play piano, just do it. She forced me to play the piano, but I'm really happy that she did, because it gave me like a super foundation for every other instrument or piece of music. So I moved on to guitar in my teenage years, and that's what really grabbed me. The guitar grabbed me, and that's when my schoolwork started to slide downhill. I wanted to grow my hair, just turn into... Weirdly to say this is 48, but kind of turn into the person I am today. That was really the start of it. So that's what I helped you.
You've even played with Megadeth.
I have.
that's insane. I mean, was that your genre of music growing up?
That was, not only my genre. Megadeth were my band. As a guitar player, I always thought that they were streaks ahead. If not maybe song-wise, but technically, they were always streaks ahead of any other metal band for me. And getting to meet them was a real... like circular moment for me. I was right there. The 14-year-old Christian was right in the room that day, going, "What the hell is going on here?" I was sweating. Dave Mustaine came over to me and was like, "Are you okay?" But I was like completely stressing, but it was so magical as well. So,
well, how did that link up, that invite to step on stage and play with them? Where did that originate?
It was in Hellfest in France, which is a massive heavy metal festival. Like, everybody is there. 200,000 fans. It's crazy. And I was doing some work for Blizzard, who produced World of Warcraft. And I was interviewing some of the bands because they were the principal sponsor. So I was interviewing some bands, and then they let me know because they knew that I love Megadeth. They said, "You're going to be interviewing them," but they didn't tell me that I was going to get a chance to play with them. So I haven't practiced or anything. That's the only thing. I was like, "Oh my God, at least I'm going to play in front of Dave Mustaine. At least let me practice." But yeah. It was such a mad day. And one thing people don't know, actually, I interviewed Alice in Chains just after that, which is like number two on my list. And they were like, "Do you want to come on stage and sing like Man in a Box with us?" And I was like, "I've just done Megadeth. I can't do this. I'm going to end up in a hospital." it was too much.
there's like this stark contrast between me and my wife. She was born in 1990. I was 77. And anytime I put on my genre of music, which is Metallica or Alice in Chains or Megadeth or Faith No More, the stereo is shut off. It's
really,
those are now known. They're like, "Oh, these are the classics." I'm like, "They're not classics." It's funny how the genre of music changes. And now that's considered the oldies.
It does, man. But my music, similar to your taste, I guess, it has kind of stuck around that time in metal. I haven't moved on to all the new metal bands or anything. I've stayed around like the Black Album, around them with Metallica. I haven't really moved past that. I don't know why. Maybe that's just a getting old thing. I suspect it is, but I don't care. Whatever.
Yeah. Well, dude, I got to ask you, when you were young, I don't know if you guys had MTV at the time. Did you use Headbangers Ball?
We didn't really have MTV back then. We only had donkeys and carts and tractors and stuff. No, we didn't. Raw Power. We had a show called Raw Power, which was on at 3 a.m. on a Friday night, and every little trash bag, I'd be down the stairs with a video recorder at 3 a.m. and Mum was like, "What are you doing downstairs?" And I'd be recording that every Friday. That was the only heavy metal we had, really.
Yeah. Headbangers Ball was on probably, I think it came on at like 11 p.m. or 12 midnight every Saturday.
Yeah.
And that was like my sixth grade through freshman year, like mandatory watching every Saturday.
Wow. You know what I'm super proud of, actually? My mother, to this day, she can identify Metallica from Megadeth. She can identify Danzig. As it's just from me playing it continually. She likes Deicide. She likes Sepultura. This is a 73-year-old woman, and she loves this music. She likes the aggression in it. She loves all the aggression and stuff. And I'm just like, "Well, preach. Preach, Mom."
Did any of them ever tour over there when you were younger? Did
oh, yeah, man. My list of concerts I've seen. I wish it's not here. I wish I could show you my box of plectrums, because I'm so tall. I would always be catching the picks, you know. I've got Sepultura. I've got Megadeth from back in the day. I've got Guns N' Roses, Faith No More. You name it, man. I've seen them. Motorhead, Deicide. could go on all day. Slayer, everything.
Yeah.
So all those genres I've seen, I was obsessed. I was completely obsessed.
Yeah, that was our youth. But where did the switch from? Where did the switch from sort of instruments to DJing? When did that start? Because I mean,
I thought you were going to say about music taste, but
yeah.
Well, really, it wasn't a switch so much for me. It was more like an addition. It was like it added on. I've never stopped playing guitar. I've never stopped liking heavy metal. But to me, weirdly, and a lot of people don't get this, in house music and DJing, I get the same vibe I get when I would be playing the guitar. Maybe not the aggression part and that sort of purging, but it's that the bass, the intensity, the vibe and the crowd, it's the same to me. And it's also similar when I'm acting. And it's similar when I'm in Comic-Con. It's just adrenaline. You know, yes. I've just discovered during this conversation that I'm an adrenaline junkie, apparently. So it just seems to be whatever produces that feeling in me is what I love. So
it's the feeling for you.
Yeah, it's just interaction with the crowd. It's like electricity. I think it's the one time I'm truly happy. That's a bit of a tangent there, but I think it really is, man. I've said this to people before. When I'm up on the stage and things are going well, and I think I don't want to be anywhere else. If someone asks me, where would you rather be? There's nowhere. So, yeah. It doesn't mean a lot to me.
That's your church.
Yeah, it is, man. And that's why pandemic and stuff really took a toll on me. And for a lot of artistic people, it was just like having this outlet taken away. You know, I didn't have any vent. And it really hit hard. It still hits hard. I don't think we're there yet, mentally, as a people. But, it was a lot to be taken away.
You've played alongside some of the greats. I know you played Tomorrowland, which I've never been, but I've always followed. What's been the aha moment in terms of venues or concerts that you've played, DJ?
I have to say Tomorrowland is one of them. Even when you say that, so you played Tomorrowland, you say I laugh, because I think it's ridiculous, because when I hear that people say that about me, I'm like, really? Did I do that? But I did. Delhi, New Delhi in India was a big... When I go to new countries and places I haven't been before, and you get that connection, and people, I've never been there before, and it's just this wonderful feeling of, in a way, it means you've been not alone, you know, because it's the same as sitting in an airport. Like, say I've been away for 6 months filming something, and someone comes to you in an airport and says, oh God, do you mind if I speak to you? And I'm like, no, go ahead. It makes you feel like you're connected still, and you're not alone. And it's the same when you travel to different countries, and they like your work, and like, all of a sudden, the world feels smaller, you know?
Yeah.
And that's really precious.
I can only imagine how many times you get stopped in the airport. I mean, you're very easy to identify with height and everything. But
yeah,
you said something interesting there, man. I don't feel alone. Is that one of your fears? Is the feeling of alone?
I don't think I'm afraid to be alone, but I don't think I like being alone. You know, growing up, I'm single from a single parent, and I don't have any brothers or sisters, and I naturally gravitated to spending time on my own. Like when I'm on tour, the minute I step off stage, I'm like almost running back to the hotel room. I almost run, but I just need a second to go. After having that high, I need to be alone for a while, because you know I put a lot into my performance. I do, and I feel like I need a minute to reset. But I don't think I'm afraid to be alone. I'm not afraid to be a cat lady or a dog man. I can be any of those things and be happy. I think it's about knowing yourself, man. And as I get older, I know myself more. And I'm not afraid to be the grumpy old man or the not grumpy old man. I just, whatever I turn out to be, I'm happy to be. And I just let everyone else deal with that.
Stop using the word old.
I know, man. It's a horrible thing.
We are not old.
I guess you're about the same age group as me, just by the music. I'm 48, so I would say you're 45-ish, or not.
I'm 46, about to turn 47.
Yeah. So we get the same vibe.
Hell, dude, I've got a baby due in about 6 weeks. So,
congratulations!
I'm freaking out here, dude. I'm freaking out.
Is it your first?
No, this will be my third But my son is 16 and my daughter's 20, so it's like I'm starting all over again.
Yeah, that's quite a gap, but you'll love it, man. You'll be fine.
I will. I think I'm freaking out more than the first two because I was, you know, 25, 28. Like,
yeah,
you think you know everything. But, dude, I've seen some of the videos of you DJing. I mean, you are dripping in sweat by the end of the performance.
Yeah, I don't stop. I mean, I don't stop moving. I literally don't stop moving from the minute I stop. I just go into this world. And often I come off, I can actually get my T-shirt and go, I can wring it out. It's very hot up there also. Yeah. Can you imagine what it's like? I think if you imagine the crowd, amphitheater, it all just comes back at you. So it's intense. So I usually have like 10 fans, but it's very hot, very hot. But yeah, I don't get a DJ who just stands there as well. I mean, I've seen other DJs and stuff. They're like, yeah, are you checking your emails, mate? You know what I mean? Are you on Grindr or something? Are you on Tinder? I mean, come on. This looks like you're enjoying yourself.
Yeah. How do you gauge your performance? Are you looking for feedback from the audience, or you just know
by their reaction? But I don't know why that got through. I'm just making sure it doesn't happen again. There you go. Are we okay? Yeah. I started that. This is a big thing for me because,
We're good, man. How do you gauge that performance? No, it's okay.
It is reading the crowd. It's reading the crowd and how far I can go in the direction that I want to go. Because there's two ways to DJ. There's many ways to DJ, but there's the DJing for the crowd, which is what a resident DJ normally does, or maybe you're doing like a festival somewhere, maybe. And then there's a DJ who's playing their own sort of music, and the crowd come to hear that. That's a very different vibe, which I kind of crossed over into just before pandemic. People were coming to hear my tracks, and I wasn't having to play the bigger songs and stuff. Yeah, if I don't get a vibe back from the audience, it's really the audience who lead me on the path. It's like I'll start off with a few songs, and then I never pre-plan what I'm going to play. Maybe within I'll maybe have 100 tracks in a playlist, and then I'll play 10 or maybe 20 of those. But I'll let the crowd steer me about what to play. But then if you're having a bad night, and it does happen, sadly, not very often, but it does happen, you won't have any direction. And you're standing with thousands of people in front of you and you don't have anything to go on. And that can be very difficult and very stressful. Because I know people paid a lot of money to see me and I want to give them the best performance I can. Mm. But it's kind of a two-way street. If they're not really giving me anything, I don't really know what to give back sometimes. But I could probably count that on two hands over 27 years, how many times that's happened. But when it does happen, it's like, oh.
You just said, though, so will you call essentially an audible? You said you're vibing off the crowd. You know which way they're going. Yeah. You may have a song in your head, but you'll switch last moment.
Oh, yeah. Many times. And it's a panic because I'll suddenly go, this will be better. Or this is going to go down terribly, actually, because there'll be maybe a part in the song. I equate being a DJ to being a teenager, bringing your friends into your bedroom and going, have you heard this guitar solo? You know. And that's I'm kind of vibing with these songs, and like I really love this, so I hope you love it too. I'm maybe waiting for a reaction from a certain part. I thought, oh god, I love this part. And I look at the crowd, and they're kind of like, "So I have to play something else now," you know.
That's intense. I can only imagine the feeling up there with thousands of people in the crowd, just like Tomorrowland.
It's
just
also the best feeling in the world.
Oh, imagine.
Yeah,
I imagine. And that is an adrenaline junkie.
Yeah. Somehow managed to do it with that bungee cords, and I'm happy about that.
Well, so we skydive, we do extreme expeditions, and I swear to God, if we don't have something planned, I start to like go down this like spiral of just like I'm bored. I need adventure. That's sort of our thing. But I do want to transition. Yeah. Acting. With Game of Thrones, did you seek the audition or did somebody reach out to you and say, hey, we think you'd be perfect for this this role?
I had auditioned for a movie about 5 years previous called Hot Fuzz, which is a Simon Pegg movie about, is it the sequel or prequel to Shaun of the Dead? I'm not really sure, but it's connected in some way.
Yeah.
But I had been DJing the night before till like 5 a.m. and I got the call before it started. I needed to get on the plane to London for an audition. So I got on the plane. I was still drunk, man. I still drank back then. And I wasn't prepared. I went to the audition, did a horrible job, which you can read in the book. I was, how she ever remembered me, I don't know. But 5 years.
At Kroger Pharmacy, care is making it easy to get vaccinated. Care is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. Care is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details. At Kroger Pharmacy, care is making it easy to get vaccinated. Care is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. Care is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.
Years later, I got a call back saying, we want to see you for the role of Hodor in Game of Thrones. I can't think of anyone else for this part. And that's how the audition happened. It was off the back of a bad audition. So when I speak to aspiring actors now, I always tell, and it's exactly the truth, there's no such thing as a bad audition. It's just not the right part, you know?
Yeah.
So just keep going. So that crappy audition gave me Hodor. And that changed my life. So,
without a
doubt, you got to take the opportunities, man.
Oh, of course. Life is a mystery to be lived, not a puzzle to be solved.
Yeah.
As much as you think you can plan it,
no, it's very true.
Things are out of your control. Yeah. Now, had you read the series?
Nope.
Before getting the part, or did you have to? Did you ever read the series?
Have not, will not, should not, shall not.
I love that. I love that.
I've told George as well. So my theory is, if I can tell George to his face, I can tell anybody.
And he probably wouldn't
even
take
care.
It as a slight. Yeah,
it's not a slight. I know what happens now. I know it's going to be slightly different. And my mom has read the books, and she's told me all the little tiny details. So I'm good. I'm good.
I'm sure you hear that from fans. Like, it wasn't like the book, or the yeah.
But it's the same for any successful franchise that's been adapted. It's not as good as the book.
It's, yeah. We've had the author.
Nothing's ever as good as your own imagination, though.
Did you realize the gravity of what this was going to be to your life when you started shooting?
Not until the first day. It was the first day on set. And I remember walking in and seeing, I'd done some sort of TV, like reality sort of stuff before, nothing on this scale anywhere close. And I just remember seeing the sets and the scale of everything. And I just thought, I'm a part of something here that's really big. And I hadn't really appreciated it until that. Made me very nervous because that was my first acting role. I hadn't had really, apart from in college, I hadn't had any serious acting training outside of that. So it definitely was a trial by fire. Over the years, the show grew. It kind of gave us, there was a lot of new actors in Game of Thrones, a lot of first-time performers. And the way the show grew over the years, I think kind of let us grow into the kind of fame of it all. Because in season one, it was big in America, but not huge. Season two kind of spread to the UK a bit, getting bigger in America. By season three, it was into Brazil, and then into Australia, and I was just seeing the countries fall, and it was just getting bigger and bigger and bigger. And we kind of grew with that. Instead of like getting into like High School Musical and all of a sudden you're an A-lister, I'm glad the way it happened. It sort of gave us a way to get accustomed to it.
It was like binge. It was it's the binge of binges for people that were a few seasons behind. And it sucked to have to wait for the next Sunday. To get the next episode. I know the book, you say you're going into the perils and triumphs of the Game of Thrones, and this is really the first book that any of the actors have written. Are you going to get into sort of the good and the dirty of behind the scenes? Is it going to cause like maybe some discontent amongst other actors?
I hope not. I hope not. I had genuinely such a positive experience with the other cast members. I'm not saying it's all positive. It's not. But that's mostly my stuff, though. It's mostly my struggles rather than with anybody else. Because that's how I view the world anyway. I don't really blame anybody for anyone else. It's all my shit. I can deal with it, you know. But I hope not. There's no one singled out. It's all... Yeah, I hope not. That's what I'm going to say. I haven't gone after anybody. I haven't gone to TMZ, put it that way. That's not me. I'm not that person. And I wasn't going to make up any shit either. So it's frank and it's honest. Maybe a name or two has been changed, but all books have that.
That's refreshing. But some people are. It seems like today's society, it's like you got to create controversy or be the last.
No, man, I didn't want to do that. I said that right from the start. I said, I know you're going to want big things in this. And there's plenty of stuff to keep people going. But I didn't want to be, like, sensationalist. Yeah. It's real. It's what really happened to me. And it was my stories, the stories that I used to tell my manager of my life. That's what actually spurred him to get me to write this. It wasn't the Game of Thrones part. It was just all the crazy shit that had happened. And I said, if we could somehow put this together. And we did. And I'm very proud of it.
Writing a book is not easy by any means. I mean, you're putting yourself out because I know you're going to dive into your life. That's not an easy thing to be vulnerable and put something out in the world.
Yeah. And also when you're talking about your family and stuff, you realize you're being vulnerable on their behalf as well. And I've talked to my family and stuff and everything's fine, but you kind of realize that as you do it, that you're speaking for other people as well in some places, and you have to be respectful, definitely. So,
this question's leading into season 5, but you know, at the end of each season's, when you were done shooting, were you just wore out?
Depending on the season, depending what good content we had, some of it was very physical. Which I'm still paying for in these days, but it was always like a sense of accomplishment. But then, it has someone who doesn't work in the industry wouldn't probably know this, but it has a series of endings. You have your picture, your live picture wrap, and then everyone's like, "Yeah, it's a wrap. Fuck off home." Sorry, can I swear? I'm so sorry if I swore. Then you have your the ADR you have to do. Then you might have to do pickups. And so this has gone on for months. And then you might have to do some visual effects stuff. So when does it really wrap? I've been doing ADR for stuff sometimes 2 weeks before it's shown on TV. And we're talking about Game of Thrones here, by the way. So it's right down to the wire. So just because we've finished shooting, we're all still working on it, really. But at the end of the picture shooting, I was always physically drained.
Okay.
Especially in the later seasons.
You were the only one literally carrying somebody on your back in the entire show.
Yeah.
I
get asked all the time, people are like, did you really carry him? I'm like, yeah, I definitely really carried him.
I know you took a knee for season 5. Was that your choice or just the script?
Just the script. Yeah, we kind of got to the place. We were beneath the tree, the great tree, at the wall, or beyond the wall, even. And I think, in my opinion, I don't know this, this is not a fact, but I believe that it was kind of that they had some other characters to introduce. So it was kind of to give space to introduce other storylines, and then they brought us back in again. So I think that's what I believe.
Was missing season 5 a little bit cathartic for you, or did you feel left out?
At first, I felt left out because obviously I live in Belfast and I was watching all my friends coming in and out. You know, I was like, "Oh, hi, bye," and then I'm trying to get the timeline right here. Rave of Thrones started then, and I ended up in Australia. And then from that minute, I did not stop touring for the whole year. So I didn't have time to be I didn't have time to feel bad about it, but at first I did feel a little reticent and a little was sad watching people come and go.
The you know, the conclusion of the show, I've got to assume that's a range of emotions because it changed your life. I'm sure there's some negatives, but for overall the good, what did it feel like when you had to finally, the show's done, and as we say, you're putting up the gun belt and that chapter of your life is over?
Finished for me or finished for the whole show?
Season six.
Which one?
Yeah, just in general.
Season six. There's a different feeling attached to both. Well, for me, season six, that all happened around the time of my 40th birthday. I think actually my 40th birthday was the day I died, on which is so typical and so Game of Thrones. I mean, you couldn't write that. So I thought I would be looking forward to it. I thought that I was going to be excited to finish and move on to something else. And I was, in a way. But saying goodbye to Isaac was hard because we'd spent so much time together, and his family also became very close. And even when I took that horrible, stinking, smelly, sweaty costume off, which never got washed, ever, in those all those years, and it smelled like a cow, basically. I remember taking it off for the last time, and from feeling nothing, all of a sudden there was like a tear coming down my cheek. It was like, am I feeling something here? And I definitely was. I was trying to hide it. But I was very sad to take off the outfit for the last time. Very strange feeling. Because it kind of becomes part of you. I've worn this so much over the last 6 years. And it's like, I'm never going to have this on again. In a way, I'm having a bit of a party. But it's also quite sad. The ending, I had different feelings about, because I quite enjoyed it. And I almost felt like for a while I wasn't allowed to enjoy it because the internet was so angry. You know what it's like, man. It's like the internet judge and jury well and truly decided that it wasn't good. And I actually thoroughly disagreed. But I enjoyed it. I don't know what to say about that.
Yeah. Well, everyone has a microphone now. You're going to get hate no matter what. That's almost a guarantee in life now. But, you know, with the book coming out, what do you want people to gain from that? What's the main theme for you of writing this?
Having gone through so many phases and incarnations of, not, I wouldn't say personality, because I've always been very true to myself, but just searching for purpose in life and the confidence to be who you really are. Just try and get to that as fast as possible. It's a really hard journey to get there, but it's the only thing that matters. And it's really the only thing that matters. As long as you're happy in yourself and you're proud of yourself and you look after the people that care about you and love you, nothing else matters. It really doesn't. That's the key to happiness, is not other people's thoughts. So that's what I would want people to know, and that you're enough. Because I spent most of my life feeling that I wasn't good enough. I was like, I was in some way too different. Or I was told this by people. It wasn't just my imagination. That, you know, I can't do this, I can't do that. You don't look the right for this. You can't be an actor because you're too tall, you're too fat, too small, too thin. You're always too something. But it's not true. Guys out there, it's not true. And that if even one person takes away that from this book, I'll be very happy.
I think a lot more than one person, especially given your following and reach, it'll impact more than one person. And that's massive, dude.
I hope so.
Do you feel that you know who you are and that you know your purpose?
Yes. Yeah, I do. And I know my faults as well. In no way am I a paragon. In no way. In fact, maybe the opposite. But I do know I am honest about myself, and I let people make their own decisions then. You know?
Yeah, the power to tune people out. Honestly, that's what I think what's wrong with social media. It's like comparison is the thief of joy, or you post something and you get the hate. That's hard for any human to do, is to block out other people. And the sooner you learn to do that, you'll have a much more crystallized path. But you also, in the same regard, you got to make sure you're not some narcissistic, selfish, human being. Because then maybe what people are saying is true and you just don't want to hear it. It's a double-sided coin with that. And I'm excited to get my hands on this book. I'm sure it's, Amazon enhanced. It'll be available in every country.
Yeah.
And is that the best way for people to pick this up on September 24th? I know pre-sales are probably going on right now.
Yeah, but with some independent booksellers as well. We've got it on Audible for the audiobook as well, which I recorded myself. It's in all those places. You're not going to be able to miss it.
Bro,
I've
written two books and we did the audio for it. And the publisher's like, hey, be warned, you're going to be really exhausted. And I'm like, get the hell out of here. And sure as hell, the first day was like 8 hours. I came home, laid down, and I was like out. My brain was hurting.
Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah. If you think about it, when was the last time you spoke solidly for 8 hours? Like, don't remember that.
And probably I stutter. Never. And I slur. My pronunciation is not always the clearest point in case. Hi. But, dude, Christian, I can't thank you enough for coming on. For the years of entertainment, for the music you make now, and entertaining, and just giving people a reprieve from life. But we usually end these because I'm fascinated with people's perspective on life and what principles guided them through. So we always ask, what are those three principles that have guided you and how you've conducted yourself and led to the majority of your success? What are your three principles in life? It could be four, it could be two.
Okay, thank you. The two is a get out option, I think. Number one is kind of just touching on what I just said, and that's just being real. Because I think in today's universe, we're constantly projecting out into social media and people who don't really matter in some ways. Obviously, I can say that, but people do really matter to my career. I understand that. But on a personal level, it's just keeping yourself protected and happy without being weird about it, and being real with people. And I think one of the biggest problems in the world today is that people who disagree with things no longer communicate. And if I could leave the world with something, I would put that together. I would have people communicating again, even with people who you violently disagree with, because I think that's the only way to make progress.
No, you're not.
Am I wrong?
The flip side of that is violence. The flip side of that is use of violence. So authenticity.
I mean, it's not really. It's just the way I live my life. It's not really. Maybe it's not the right response, but that's. I very much do believe that, and just not hiding who you are. Don't be ashamed of who you are, and if you have something different about you, bloody use it. Don't be ashamed of it. If you're tall, make sure you don't be ashamed to be tall. If you're overweight, use it in some way. If you want to lose weight, lose weight. If you don't. Just be happy. Being happy is hard. Being happy is hard these days. And if you can make yourself happy in any way, don't do it. Do it. And don't feel bad about it.
As another musician once said that's famous here in Texas, Willie Nelson, let people be people. It's their greatest strength. Wise words from a wise man and a country music legend. And any other principles that have served you well?
Just having faith in your talents as well, and not to doubt yourself, because the world will doubt you, so you have to believe in yourself. Don't be if you're good at something, don't be ashamed of it. Just don't be afraid to show your light. I'm trying to stay away from watchwords here and like canned sayings. Like, show your light. Come on, Christian, do better. But it is that. Don't hide under a bush for anybody. Because people will try to keep you down. And don't let them, basically.
That's beautiful.
It's a similar message to what I said, but it's so important. If that's what I leave the world, that's what I want to leave.
And if you're hanging out with people that are keeping you down, then change your circle. That's.
But yeah.
Misery,
exactly.
Misery loves company.
Exactly.
Man. Well, dude, I.
It really does.
Accomplished. I'm not saying this lightly. I mean, from award-winning actor to award-winning DJ to now author, man, you've done quite a bit. You've stood for who you are in your community, and that's more than most. So, Christian, I can't thank you enough for joining us. Any parting words for the audience?
Just be kind to each other and take care.
Perfect. Well, thank you, sir. You have a wonderful evening in Ireland.
I will.
And hope to meet you in person one day.
Yeah, man. I'd love that. Take care. Thank you for having me.
All right, Christian.
Cheers, man.
Out of here.
Cheers.
At Kroger Pharmacy, CARE is making it easy to get vaccinated. CARE is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. CARE is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.